Happy Election Day. Today is the day to get out to the polls and exercise the greatest privilege we have in this country, voting. After months of preparation together, we finally get to cast our ballots and make known the representatives we want in office and our views on the 10 propositions affecting California. But some make the argument that living in a state like California means that your vote doesn't really matter. How do we respond to this if the results of the election aren't what we hope for them to be? If the outcomes of the propositions are not what we voted for, then did our vote really matter at all? I'm your host, Tess Abraham, and I want to give you some encouragement on how to think about election results, whether good or bad, on today's election episode of The California Conversation. I know that many of you have already early voted in this election, so today you're not going to the polls. But for those of you who didn't vote early or vote by mail, today is the day to get out and vote. Voting in person on election day is probably my favorite feeling. The funny thing is that in past elections, I always voted by mail, but in the March primary, I decided I wanted to try voting in person, so it was my first time going to my closest polling place. And let me tell you, I had a blast. Everyone was so kind and genuinely so happy to be serving their community and their country. I stopped to talk to the guy who gave me my ballot, and he was telling me that volunteering made him feel like he's doing his part for America. He also said that with politics being so divided, it made him feel good to see everyone coming together, excited to vote regardless of their political party. I love that. Voting should be exciting because we're doing something that people for centuries never had the privilege to do. We're taking part, an active part, in our government, and we're literally electing our leaders. The best part is, we're doing it together as communities and as fellow Americans. There's just nothing better than that, in my view. All of that to say, I'm excited, and I'll be eagerly standing in line at my local polling center this afternoon. But as exciting as voting today is, the reality is that tonight the polls will close and the results of all the races will be final. While we've talked a lot on the show about why you should engage in politics, as well as why you should vote in this election, we haven't yet talked about what comes after the election. What do we do if every proposition that we've talked about over the past 12 weeks ends in the opposite outcome from how you voted? What if the candidates that you researched and cast your ballot for aren't voted in? How are we to think about these losses, and what do we do next? I can't tell you how many times I've heard this argument in response to that question. Well, my vote doesn't really matter in California anyway. And what's the support for that, according to the people who say it? They didn't win. And so if they didn't win the race, whether it's for a candidate or a proposition or a local measure, if the outcome didn't go the way that they voted, then the conclusion reached is, my vote just didn't matter. While it's completely true that in California there's an overwhelming majority toward one political party, evidenced by the supermajority split in the Senate and the Assembly, I want to make the argument to you today that your vote always matters, no matter what state you live in and whether the majority is with you or not. If 90% of the people in your state vote the same way as you, and you see what you voted for put in place, your vote matters. If 90% of the people in your state vote opposite to you, and you do not see what you voted for put in place, your vote still matters. No election, this election included, is ever a waste, regardless of what comes of it. Why? Why do I say that so confidently, and why do I believe that that is the case? Because elections are just one component of our democratic process, and one election specifically is just a snapshot in time. It is not the end-all, be-all, can-never-be-changed, set-in-stone reality. There are countless examples of times when good propositions didn't pass, but still acted as a catalyst to change policy in the future. Or people ran for office and lost, in some cases several times, only to come back and win in the future. Or political movements that face severe opposition for decades but may change slowly over time. To that end, I want to go through many of these examples. I want to tell the stories of men and women who pushed forward change, who faced pushback, setbacks, and struggles, who didn't even always see the fruit of their labors, and yet who made change one slow, patient, determined, and passionate step at a time. I hope you will walk away from this episode with a greater resolve and a deeper understanding of the reality that however the election ends tonight, you should still engage in politics tomorrow. Let's start in 2012 with Proposition 37 in California. Proposition 37 was proposed to require all foods that were genetically modified to be labeled as such, as well as prohibit companies from labeling any GMOs as natural. 2 months before the election, the proposition was polling with 61% support. After the election, the proposition did not pass, with just 49% yes and 51% no votes. This was, understandably, a huge loss, especially since it had looked like voters supported the measure throughout election season. But while the measure didn't pass, it actually wasn't a loss. The New York Times reported, quote, "Instead of quelling the demand for labeling, the defeat of the California measure has spawned a ballot initiative in Washington state and legislative proposals in Connecticut, Vermont, New Mexico, and Missouri, and a swelling consumer boycott of some organic or natural brands owned by major food companies." Research professor Charles Benbrook of Washington State University said in his analysis, quote, "The big food companies found themselves in an uncomfortable position after Prop 37, and they're talking amongst themselves about alternatives to merely replaying that fight over and over again." Prop 37 sparked debate across the nation and resulted in changes in policy in several states. The effects have rippled all the way to today, when the conversation around GMOs and natural foods is more prominent than ever. The most impactful change brought on by this failed proposition was a bill signed into law by President Obama in 2016, which officially required the labeling of GMOs on a nationwide level. The point of this example is that its supporters probably felt discouraged and surprised when it didn't pass in 2012, and it could have been easy to think that the changes that they wanted to push for would die with Prop 37. But the opposite of that happened. Its defeat had the power to change the national policy and conversation on GMOs. On the other hand, there have been propositions that have passed with negative effects that were later repealed as public opinion shifted. Take Proposition 47 for a current example. You'll remember that Prop 47 was passed by voters in California in 2014 and was followed by a subsequent failed attempt to overturn it. As we've discussed in several previous episodes of this show, it lowered the classification and penalties for certain theft and drug crimes from felonies to misdemeanors. Just as a side note, if you haven't already, you should definitely go check out episode 3 on this topic and my bonus episode from last week where I discussed the immediate effects of Prop 47 with Chief Deputy District Attorney Jeff Greason. He shared from a firsthand perspective that when he first read Proposition 47 before it was passed, he knew the effects it would have on crime in his counties. The passage of the proposition has prevented district attorneys from being able to effectively prosecute these crimes and has disincentivized police from even arresting the criminals who commit them. In 2020, there was a ballot initiative to repeal the impacts of Prop 47, but it was voted down by a 38% yes to a staggering 62% no vote. For 10 years, Proposition 47 has remained in place as criminal justice has collapsed across the state, worsening the drug and homelessness crises and impacting business owners due to rampant and unmitigated theft. This could seem like a pretty hopeless situation for anyone who disagreed with the measure and who's seeing its downstream effects in real time. But all hope is not lost, because this election, we have Proposition 36 on our ballots, and the Public Policy Institute of California is reporting that an overwhelming 73% of voters are likely to vote yes on the measure. That's a long way from the 38% support of a similar measure just 4 years ago. It would have been easy for proponents of Prop 36 to look at the widespread support of Prop 47 from powerful people like the governor, no less, as well as the defeat of the attempt to overturn it in 2020, and say it isn't worth it to keep fighting this fight. It isn't making any difference. Any attempts to make a difference are not effective in the public view. But they didn't say that, did they? They pushed forward Prop 36. They have worked to inform the public on why they are seeing smash and grabs, drug overdoses, and discouraged business owners. And they have given a voice to the prosecutors, district attorneys, and victims who are overlooked and facing the implications of bad policy every day. Tonight, they may finally see the fruit of all of that labor, but they will continue to persevere regardless because they believe in the mission of saving California from the downward trends it has suffered as a result of lackluster leadership. I could go on and on with examples, but it isn't just propositions that have faced defeat. It's people too. There have been many influential leaders throughout our history who suffered defeat before victory. Take Abraham Lincoln. You may not know this, but Honest Abe wasn't always the well-respected president that many of us know him to be. Before holding the office that he's most famous for, he ran for the U.S. Senate twice, and both times he lost. He also ran for the House of Representatives and endured two lost races there as well before he was finally elected in 1846. Can you imagine running for those positions several times, losing and not giving up? Many of us would take one loss as a sign that it wasn't meant to be, but he persevered and he went on to become known for preserving our country's union, issuing the Emancipation Proclamation and thus freeing the slaves held in Confederate states and ultimately appealing to our nation's greatest values. Just think, if he had taken his losses in the Senate and House and chosen to give up on a life in government, who would have been president during his term? Would they have worked as hard to keep our country together in a time of radical division? Would they have spoken out against slavery? Lincoln didn't give up after several losses. He didn't see his work thus far as pointless. An example closer to our time now is President Reagan, elected to presidential office in 1980. Like Lincoln, his path to the presidency was not linear. While he was successful in achieving the governor position in California, he ran for president and lost two times before 1980. He lost the Republican nomination to Richard Nixon in 1968 and again lost to Gerald Ford in 1976. It wasn't until his third run for president that he secured his party's nomination and went on to win the general election. Again, I can't imagine one presidential run, let alone three. Yet, he too went on to become a consequential president, known for ending the Cold War with Russia and for his economic policies, part of which reduced the marginal income tax rate from 70% to 28%. President Reagan is just another example that losing one race doesn't guarantee continued failure in the future, and sometimes it takes multiple attempts to win the highest office in the land. This idea of perseverance isn't limited to races each election. It's even more compelling when considering greater political movements across history. Think of the suffrage movement and the fight for the women's right to vote. Susan B. Anthony, who is best known for leading this movement, was born to a Quaker family who emphasized that all people were equal before God, spoke against slavery, and required education for boys and girls alike. Her early political activism centered around the abolition of slavery and the ratification of the 13th Amendment. But when she began to work as a teacher, her passion for women's equality was sparked by the reality that male teachers were paid just $10 per month, while female teachers were paid $2.50. This passion led her to become at the forefront of the fight for giving women the right to vote. She even went as far as casting a ballot in the 1872 election before women were allowed to do so. That act got her arrested, tried, convicted, and fined. For over 50 years of her life, Susan and other women like her fought for the U.S. Constitution to include them in giving them the right to vote. She inspired later movements, like the protests carried out by the Silent Sentinels in 1917. These were silent protests outside of the White House that lasted for over 2 years and resulted in several of their arrests, attacks, and even imprisonment. Finally, in 1920, the 19th Amendment was ratified and officially granted women the constitutionally protected right to vote. Susan never saw that result. She died in 1906, just 14 years beforehand. Here's another picture of resilience, perseverance, and fighting tirelessly for what you believe in, regardless of seeing the result. Susan would never see the lasting impact that her actions and legacy would leave. She would never know how much her life's work would move forward women's equality. If she had given up the fight because she wasn't seeing the progress she wanted, or because getting a woman's right to vote added to the Constitution seemed like too lofty of a goal, then she wouldn't have blazed the trail for the women who came after her. I might not be able to vote today. That hits me hard. I stand on her shoulders and on the shoulders of so many brave women who dedicated their lives to achieving rights and privileges that they would never have themselves. Of course, there are so many other movements like this that we could discuss. The civil rights movement lasted roughly 14 years. Nelson Mandela fought apartheid in South Africa for 40 years, including 27 of them that he spent in prison. Malala Yousafzai had her right to education taken away by the Taliban in Pakistan when she was just 11 years old. She spoke out against them, advocating for her equal right as a human being to learn. The result of that was that she was shot in the head at just 15 years old, but survived. And what did she do upon surviving an attack like that? She didn't stop. She advocated all the more for women's rights. Could you imagine sitting in a prison cell for 27 consecutive years like Nelson Mandela? or enduring a life-threatening, brutal attack like Malala, yet continuing on in the fight? How hopeless must it have felt to sit in a prison cell for over 2 decades, but it would not break Mandela? How terrifying it must have been to speak out again, knowing that there were many dangerous men who wanted you dead, but it would not silence Malala. These are all stories that remind us that change has never been fast. It has never happened overnight, not with the really important issues. It has been a slow fight built upon by several people who would never see the end result. Political change has required strength and perseverance, not discouragement at the first sign of setback or failure. Yet it has not been impossible. And those who have failed refuse to end their legacies that way. It was only through pressing on that they were able to affect real change in the world. The reality is that as an American, whether native born or through naturalization, these ideals are what make up your heritage. Our founding fathers were no strangers to defeat, difficulty, and loss. They were faced with the reality of creating a new world, breaking away from an empire to start an experiment. In hindsight, we can look at their actions and marvel, but think about their perspective as it was happening. Think about what it must have been like for them as they couldn't see the future and all that our country would become. The great experiment was not guaranteed to work. There were times when it seemed that it would certainly fail before it even got started. Yet, they pressed on and they built the foundations for what our country is today. Men like Patrick Henry, who is at the very forefront of discontent with how Britain was treating the colonists. He led the protests against the Stamp Act and resolved that colonists, who would later become Americans, should only be taxed by their representatives. He was a key member of the First Continental Congress and is most famous for his line, "Give me liberty or give me death." He made the case before the Virginia Convention, rallying Virginians to oppose Britain's invasion of their colony. He acknowledged that they were facing a formidable opponent, but in his view, they had no other choice than to fight for what they believed in, which was their freedom. Listen to a few excerpts from the speech before he gets to his famous line. Quote, "If we wish to be free, if we mean to preserve inviolate those inestimable privileges for which we have been so long contending, if we mean not basely to abandon the noble struggle in which we have been so long engaged and in which we have pledged ourselves never to abandon until the glorious object of our contest shall be obtained, we must fight. I repeat it, sir, we must fight." He goes on to address those who might say that the fight is too hard or too hopeless or too unrealistic. Quote, "They tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be the next week or the next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed and when a British guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs and hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemy shall have bound us hand and foot? Sir, we are not weak if we make a proper use of those means which the God of nature hath placed in our power." Is that not still relevant to us today? Our fight is more ideological today than it is physical, but how often do we hear the defeatist mentality that the vote doesn't go our way, or that our values are just slipping away in society, or that we can't really make any sort of difference in a state like California because it's too far gone? Instead, we should be encouraging each other with the very same cries that Patrick Henry used 250 years ago. When will we be stronger and more equipped to push forward good legislation and push back against bad legislation? Will it be the next election? Will it be once our state is supremely opposed to our values and our common sense ideals? Will we make effective change by throwing up our hands and refusing to engage because we didn't like the outcomes of one election? If Patrick Henry could be resolved to fight in the face of a resolution that would change the colonists' entire world, then surely we can take heart when we face opposition, failure, and negative outcomes. It wasn't just him. It was Samuel Adams, who was instrumental in organizing the Boston Tea Party, making him a target of British suspicion and anger. It was John Adams, who pushed forcefully for independence from the British, sparking debate with those who wanted to take a more moderate approach to Britain's overreach. It was John Hancock who signed the Declaration of Independence first, even though his prominence and wealth gained him threats from the British and had the potential to strip away his privileges. It was Thomas Paine who wrote Common Sense to appeal to the common people that reforming the British system was not enough. Independence from it entirely should be their aim. It was George Washington who led the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War, facing intense challenges like they did at Valley Forge, lacking food, medicine, and facing defeat, while resolving in the most dire of circumstances to be even better prepared and further motivated to stand strong against the British. It was James Madison, who's known as the father of the Constitution, yet who in the process of writing it faced intense scrutiny and partnered together with Alexander Hamilton and John Jay to defend the Constitution to the public and sway the public opinion toward ratifying the document. And speaking of Alexander Hamilton, it was Hamilton who faced intense opposition to his view of a strong national government and his proposal for establishing a national bank, yet who established the basis for our very economic system as we know it today. The list just goes on and on and on of story after story of bravery and determination despite clear and present danger, obstacles, and pushback. To use a phrase that I used earlier, these are the shoulders that we stand on. These are the men who came before us and established our country. We must uphold their legacy because it is our legacy, the American legacy. The point is, when we are staring failure and disappointment directly in the face, it is not the time to shrink back and give up. It is the time to stand firm. The reason that we know the names of all the people that I've mentioned today is because they were facing failure. They were facing impossible situations. They did incur setbacks. Yet, what made them so great, what wrote them into the history books and the hearts and minds of the public, is precisely that they did hard things. They didn't give up, no matter how hard it became. It is not just a given that everyone will agree with us or that election results will go our way. We expect it to be easy, but just like all of those who came before us, we have to put in the hard work of changing public opinion to understand why we advocate for the policies that we do. And we have to do that persuading while keeping in mind once again that real change takes time. It takes resolve, it takes grit, it takes perseverance, and you might not even see the end result. But it does not mean that the fight isn't worth it. What is my point in all of these stories? My point is that tonight we will see a president-elect, we will see winners of races across the country and in our state, and we will see the outcomes of propositions that we've been studying together for months. Some of those outcomes may be positive. They may be what you voted for. Certainly there will be others that turn out to be the opposite of what you were hoping for. But even if every person or measure that you voted on results in the opposite outcome, I want to challenge you that your vote was not wasted. I want to challenge you that your voice does matter, even in the state of California. I want to challenge you that the impact of the exercise of your civil responsibilities is much further reaching than obtaining the desired outcomes of one election. You are part of a bigger process, a democratic system that extends further out than just the next year or 2 years or 4 years. You cannot get discouraged because there is far, far more work to be done. And specifically to the Christian, you can face the results of today's election with boldness, courage, and peace because we serve a God who is providential over all things, who cares deeply about the details of your life and the lives of those around you, and who has promised that he will never leave you or forsake you. He sees your faithfulness in seeking the good of the community, city, and state around you. And even when the results do not go the way that we hope, he is still working all things together for our good. He is the God who, according to Isaiah 40, brings princes to nothing. Verse 17 says, all the nations are as nothing before him. They are accounted by him as less than nothing and emptiness. His power is great. His reach is vast, but his hand is loving and his heart is good. Stand firm to push back the tides of evil. Advocate for the good of your family, your neighbor, your country. But then surrender the outcomes to his wise and loving providence, trusting that no matter what the days ahead hold, he will bring you through them. He has purpose in every election, the outcome of every race, every person who holds the office of president, and every disappointment that you may feel when it seems that his hand is absent. Think today on the words of Charles Spurgeon. God is too good to be unkind, and he is too wise to be mistaken. And when we cannot trace his hand, we must trust his heart. I have one more example to share with you, specifically to bolster the faith of the Christian and the resolve of the church to keep engaging in politics after today. We recently watched as one of the most controversial landmark cases decided by the Supreme Court was just overturned, Roe v. Wade. In 1973, the Supreme Court established abortion as a fundamental right implicit in the Constitution's 14th Amendment. This made abortion legal on a national level, something that was celebrated by pro-abortion activists, but represented a devastating moment in history for Christians across the country. For those of us who oppose abortion, the goal has always been to work to persuade the public and each state of the reality and significance of life from the moment of conception, and then to change policy across the nation to protect and preserve those unborn lives. A sweeping national legalization of abortion was nothing short of crushing. But pro-lifers have not given up. Pregnancy centers across the country have continued their work to support mothers facing unplanned pregnancies through counseling, free baby supplies, and encouragement through each woman's unique story. Activist groups have continued to let their work change public opinion on abortion and expose the radical dangers it poses to women, let alone the babies. They didn't give up, even as they had to look at the reality that their work would be limited until something changed on a national level. And in 2022, it did. On June 24th, 2022, in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, the Supreme Court reversed the Roe v. Wade ruling and attached precedent, arguing that the decision made 50 years prior was, quote, an abuse of judicial authority, something that legal experts have been saying since its passage. The point of this example is to stop and ask ourselves, how easy would it have been on January 22nd, 1973, for pro-life activists and Christians across the United States to throw up their hands and say the work that we're doing doesn't matter? How hopeless would it have seemed to ever reach a goal of abolishing abortion when the highest court in our country just legalized it on a sweeping level across all 50 states? Would it really feel like the work that they were doing was making a difference? Or would it seem like the outcome of the Supreme Court's decision was validation that their work didn't matter? Just think about the fact that there are many pro-life people who were alive in 1973 when the Roe decision went into effect, who didn't live to see it overturned in 2022. They would never see the fruit of their conversations with others, their support of time and money to their local pregnancy centers, their attendance at annual Walk for Life events, and their prayers for change on the national scale. But just because they never saw the result, does that mean that it wasn't worth it? That it didn't make a difference? That they should have walked away from the cause entirely? The answer is a resounding no. They set the foundation for the court ruling. They have saved many lives in the process. They have rallied churches and organizations and the hearts and minds of citizens across America, all to be better equipped to push back against the pro-abortion view and to prioritize children and families through the protection of the most innocent and vulnerable people group among us, the unborn. While there is still more work to be done and more progress to be made on the issue, the work of pro-lifers has never been in vain. And now they have greater capability to continue making real changes in each state. That should inspire you. And it should inspire you because it should remind you that change is real and possible, regardless of whether or not you can see it coming. Change might take 5 years or 50 years. It might be something that you never get to witness in your lifetime. But you don't engage in politics just to see the desired outcome. You engage in politics because your politics are shaped by your values and ultimately by the gospel. You cannot not engage because issues like abortion today are theological and spiritual issues. They transcend the idea that church is separate from government. You engage in politics to display the heart of God to the world and to bring our government and our culture back to the values that He outlines for us in His word. In conclusion, I hope that for each and every one of you listening, you can watch the election results roll in tonight and tomorrow, and regardless of the outcome, say with certainty that your vote mattered, that there's still more work to be done, and that you are more compelled and determined than ever to participate in that work. And to that end, our work here on the California Conversation is not done. We are just getting started. There is so much more to cover as we begin to look at legislation currently in effect in our state and set to go in effect come 2025. I cannot wait to continue this journey with you all as we work together to be informed, to persuade those around us of our values and convictions, and to restore our state. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you need help with the state measures on your ballot today, please check out my voter guide on my website, linked in the show notes, and listen to last week's episode for a summary of each proposition. If you've been enjoying this podcast, please subscribe and share it with your friends, family, and fellow Californians. And if you know people in your life who believe that their vote doesn't count in California, then please share today's episode with them. I'll see you back here next week for another episode of the California Conversation.